Now, Richard Wilson and David Tennant star in the next of our Walter Scott classics.
We present The Antiquary by Walter Scott, adapted for radio by Robin Brooks.
On a fine summer's day, near the end of the 18th century, a young man is waiting to take a public carriage from Edinburgh to Queensferry, where there is a passage boat for the crossing of the Firth of Forth. The hour has struck. Our young man amuses himself by speculating upon the character of his only fellow traveller, a man of the age of 60, with a large folio under his arm.
You are a reading man, sir.
Oh, my folio, you mean. A recent purchase.
And what's the object of your studies?
This is Sandy Gordon's Itinerarium Septentrionale, a book illustrative of Roman remains in Scotland.
Are there many such? I know only what I read in Tacitus.
Aha! Publius Cornelius Tacitus. Well, then you must know that there are other authorities for the doings of the ancients, such as urns, vases, votive altars, and above all, the marks of castramentation.
When the coach arrives at the ferry, it is clear from the extent of wet sand that the hour of tide is past. But the older man is now enjoying his conversation so much that he seems quite resigned to the delay.
We'll have a snack here at the Hawes, and I'll be very happy to finish the account I was giving you of the difference between castra stativa and castra estiva. Do you mind me asking where you are bound, Mr. Lovell?
I'm bound for Fairport.
Oh, as am I. It's my hometown. And for you, Mr. Lovell, an excursion for pleasure?
Not entirely.
Oh, perhaps they're on business with some of the commercial people there.
I have no recourse to commerce there.
So the two gentlemen, Mr. Oldbuck and young Mr. Lovell, travel together to Fairport. He invites his young acquaintance to dinner as soon as is convenient. Thus it is that, a few days later, Mr. Lovell calls upon Mr. Oldbuck at his venerable and solitary grange near to the town of Fairport and is conducted to his cabinet of curiosities.
My sanctum sanctorum, as I call it. A sad jumble it may appear.
Oh, no.
But this profusion of trinkets and gewgaws...
By no means.
Oh! Mr. Lovell, please do not sit on that. That is an ancient caltrop or crotes, lately dug up from a bog near Bannockburn, by which were lacerated the feet of the English chargers. I would not have it lacerate you, dear sir.
I beg your pardon, sir. Here are treasures. So many books. So many parchments.
But, sir, I have something in my grounds beyond my orchard which will astonish you the more.
It commands a fine view.
Do you not see anything else remarkable? Nothing upon the surface of the ground?
I do see something like a ditch, indistinctly.
Indistinctly? Pardon me, sir. Nothing could be more plainly traced. It is the Roman vallum with its ditch or foss. Here stood a Roman fort. Fools have ploughed up three sides of it. But the fourth remains. I believe it marks the spot of the final confrontation between Agricola and the Caledonian tribes.
As described in Tacitus.
I have begun to dig, and I have found a stone on which appears the letters A-D-L-L.
To stand for?
Agricola, De Corwit, Libbins, Lubins.
Dedicated willingly and...
Heartily.
By Agricola.
You must peruse my essay on the campaign. Over there was the left-hand gate, over there the right-hand, and here the praetorium, where Julius Agricola himself perchance beheld the chariots of the savage Caledonians advancing.
Praetorium here, praetorium there.
A tall, grizzled beggar in a long blue mendicant's gown with a bag and a staff has stolen up on them.
This is our beadsman, Mr. Lovell, Eddie Ochiltree. What's that you say, Eddie?
About this bit of earth, Your Honour. I mind the building of it.
The devil you do. Why, you old fool, it was here before you were born and will be here after you're hanged. What do you know about it?
I ken this. Then about 20 years syne, I and the mason lads set to work and built this thing for Aiken Drum's bridal. A blithe day we had. And if you hook up the turf, you'll maybe find a stain that Aine of the Masons cut four letters on. A-D-L-L. For Aiken Drums Lang Ladle.
There's some mistake about this.
Oh, I never deal with mistakes. They bring mischances.
Eddie, go down to the house and they'll give you your dinner. Only say nothing of that foolish story of yours.
Nobody shall care a word about it from me. Heaven reward, Your Honour.
The rascal knows more old ballads and traditions than any other man in the parish. But I must look to it, or he will spread his damned nonsensical story over half the county.
Mr. Oldbuck determines to invite him to dinner to meet his neighbour.
This is my old friend, Sir Arthur Warder.
Sir?
And this is my fair enemy, his daughter, Miss Isabel.
Sir, and no man's enemy, although I know you only jest, Mr. Oldbuck.
And this is my chicken pie, made after a recipe bequeathed me by my departed grandmother. Of happy memory.
When the port is on the table, and Miss Isabel, who has been strangely silent, has as soon as possible retired, Oldbuck and Sir Arthur enter into several exquisite discussions, in which the younger guest takes but a slender share, until he is started out of a profound reverie.
How say you, Mr. Lovell?
Speak up, man.
Forgive me. About what?
Oh, Lord.
He has been wool-gathering all this time, no getting sense out of a young man once the women folk are invited.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Why, man, as I was saying, there was once a people called the Picts.
Or Picked.
Properly, Picts. They spoke a Gothic dialect.
Celtic. Picts.
The learned Ritson is of my opinion.
Ah, the erudite Chalmers of mine. There is a list of Pictish kings. Half of them have the Celtic patronymic Mac, Macfedrith, Macfungus.
Ah, mushroom monarchs, every one of them.
The list was copied by Henry Maule.
I laugh at Henry Maule and his history.
Do not laugh at a better man than yourself. Maule was of high family.
And a mere person such as myself should speak of him with deference?
Gentlemen.
Because I am the son of a printer and do not number in my genealogy all the brawling, bullet-headed, iron-fisted old Gothic barons, none of whom could write their own name.
If you sneer at my ancestry...
Gentlemen, please.
I shall take care how I honour with my company one who shows himself so ungrateful to my condescension.
Oh, Sir Arthur!
Stay a minute, Sir Arthur. Oh, Lord.
I'll go after him, sir.
Isabel, I'm sorry to take you away.
I am not sorry to depart, dear father. Oh.
What's the matter?
There's that Mr. Lovell.
Oh, he seems to desire an opportunity to join us.
Let us leave the lane and walk home by the sands.
Ah, you don't want to meet the young fellow again, eh? Very well, very well. I'll send this boy to meet the carriage. Hey, you!
Me, sir.
Boy!
Yes, sir.
Meanwhile, Mr. Oldbuck takes up a cup of tea and a volume of the Rambler.
This is all one gets, putting oneself out of one's way to give dinners. The devil's in them.
He proceeds in his studies for some time, until his manservant taps upon the door.
Sir, I'm no easy in my mind.
What is it?
Sir Arthur and Miss Isabel.
Well, they must be home long ago.
No, sir. They did not go by the turnpike. They went by the sands.
Along the sands? But the tide? Surely not.
I saw them turn down by the Mussel Craig.
Great God. An almanac. Bring me an almanac.
What?
Oh, never mind. Here it is. Oh, as I feared. Ropes! Fit some ropes! We must get out along the cliff! Bring some rope!
Sir Arthur and his daughter pace along the sands, passing one projecting headland after another. On one side are iron-bound cliffs, and on the other a tide rising rapidly, lit by the rays of the declining sun and whipped up by a storm wind.
I wish we had kept to the road.
Do not fear. We shall get round. Look, there is someone coming to meet us. He must have passed the headland.
Come back! Come back!
It's Eddie Ockletree.
Why do you not come back?
But we will get round the head.
The tide will be running there by now. That's all I can do to get round. Well, maybe get back. It's our only hope.
God, my child.
Dear father.
I heard you were here from the lad he sent to meet your carriage. I couldn't abide to think of the dainty young lady's peril. Oh, Mac, haste, my bonny lady.
We will make Ness Point.
Whoever saw a race as the tide is running now?
They struggle forward through the rising storm and gathering dark in the double agony of terror and suspense.
You see yon wee black speck among the waves yonder?
Yes.
Well, while we see yonder rock, we'll get round in this.
But as they come to a turn in the path around the cliff bottom, for a moment the rock is hidden from sight. And when they emerge, the signal of safety is lost in a mass of breakers, which rise in prodigious sheets of snowy foam against the dark brow of the precipice.
God have mercy on us. Oh, my child, my poor child.
Good man, can you think of nothing? I'll make you rich. I'll give you a farm.
Oh, riches will soon be equal. Any land, and you would give your fair bounds and barony for a dry square of rock.
Oh. They clamber up onto the highest ledge of the cliff that they can reach to await the sure progress of the raging element.
Is there no way to climb up?
Oh, not without a rope. With a rope. This is the only... What? Oh, his name be praised. I see him coming down the crack now. Oh, yeah, you're right. That way. That there's a root of tree to fasten on there. Run and attack your time, canny lad. I'll win it, ye, and then we'll get the young lady up, and then Sir Arthur. Hey!
I fastened the rope. I can climb it again and fetch assistance.
Do so, Mr. Lovell, for heaven's sake.
It is too dark.
No, have no fear. I've marked all the places as I came down. There's still light enough, but not much time.
If I are going up with you, we can haul them up.
Leave me. Let death spare the green corn and take the ripe.
No, Father.
I see them. I see them down on that flat stone. Hello!
Here's a rope, Mr. Roper. Someone's gone down.
It's Lovell. There he is, tying the young lady on.
Forgive me this liberty.
I understand.
Is that secure? I beg your pardon.
It is. You need not apologise.
Paul! Paul away!
Oh, Mr. Oldbuck!
Have a care!
Miss Water, I will convey you home.
Not till I see my father safe.
Bows away! Look to Sir Arthur! The whole barony depends on 3 plies of hemp.
Haul away!
One by one, the 3 men are plucked from the rising water. Lovell, the last to go up.
Is Miss Water safe?
I have sent her home in the carriage straight away. I'm sure she would thank you.
I must go home then. I'm wet to the skin.
No, sir. Not one bit. You will come home with me, get into a warm bed and have a change of dry clothes this instant. Come along now.
In fact, Miss Warder had lingered until she was sure that Mr. Lovell was safe. But he remained unaware that she had expressed any interest in the fate of the young man who had assisted her in the hour of peril. Now, as he lies beneath warm sheets in Mr. Oldbuck's guest bed, his thoughts run on her.
She was determined not to acknowledge me. She was keen to escape from my company, and that's what brought her into danger. She only desires to shut the door against hope, to extinguish a passion which she cannot return. It is not extinguished. But I will see her no more. Tomorrow, I will leave this place.
You look pale, Mr. Lovell. Was the bed damp?
Not at all, sir. The accommodation was excellent.
Well, then you must stay another night.
I'm greatly obliged, but...
But me no buts. I have my heart set on it.
I'm afraid I must soon think of leaving Fairport.
Alas. But at least today I aim to walk as far as Knockwinnock Castle and inquire after the old knight and my fair foe, Miss Isabel, if you would accompany me.
I'm a stranger to them. Do you think that Sir Arthur might in civility expect a call from me?
Of course. Let us go, by all means. I shall show you the grave of John o' the Gunnel on the way. Here lieth John o' ye Gunnel, earth hath ye knit, and heaven ye kernel.
At Knockwinnock Castle, the fair Miss Isabel leans out of the parlour window, musing upon her adventures of the night before.
Why should it be my fate to receive such help from one whose passion I have laboured to discourage? Why should chance have given him this advantage over me?
And as she muses, she sees the old beggar, Eddie Ochiltree, enter the castle courtyard.
Eddie?
My lady.
Eddie sits down on an old stone bench beside the parlour window, and Miss Isabel leans out to talk with him.
I don't know how to thank my preserver.
Oh, it wasn't just me.
But promise me, Eddie, if you ever wish to settle when you turn old, if you choose to reside here at the castle, there will always be a place for you by the fire.
No, miss. What would all the country about do for one to Eddie that brings the news and country cracks frae a farmstead into another? Troth, lady, I can't only down my vacation.
Well, then, in the meantime, take this.
Oh, no, my lady. And then attack muckle silver at Ains. And they say Sir Arthur himself has run himself out with his hawkings and minings for lead and copper.
We have enough to pay our debts. Oh. And requiting you is one of the foremost. Is there nothing I can do for you?
There's a thing, maybe.
It shall be done, if it is in my power.
Oh, it is. You're a bonny young lady, and a good un. Dinna you turn awa' the lad, Lovell, as you did a while side on the walk beneath the Briary Bank.
I have no recollection.
Oh, I saw you both. Heard you too?
I'm sure I don't know.
Be canny with the lad, for he loves you well. And it's by him, and no to ony thing I could have done for you, that you and Sir Arthur were safe just at eve. Huh? And good day to you now, my young lady. Good day.
Without waiting for an answer, he walks away towards the kitchens. Miss Isabel remains for a moment, leaning against the window ledge, until she suddenly observes old Buck and young Lovell entering the courtyard.
Maggie? Miss?
We have visitors. Show them to the drawing room. I will be with them in a little while.
Oh, yes, miss.
Mr. Oldbuck. Mr. Lovell.
You look well, my fair foe, as though flying up cliffs has been your natural occupation. And how fare Sir Arthur?
Indifferently well, I'm afraid. Not able to receive your congratulations or thank Mr. Lovell.
I had no thought of intruding, as one who must be associated with painful reflections.
Please do not think my father ungrateful. I am sure he would be happy to show his gratitude in any way Mr. Lovell could consider proper.
What sort of qualification is that? Let us have no more of that nonsense. We'll see him another day. What news from the mines? Anything good?
I fear not. There lie some specimens lately sent.
Ah, I'll examine them.
I did not want... That is, Mr. Oldbuck was very pressing...
Mr. Lovell, I am sure you are incapable of abusing our gratitude. And if you could see me as a friend, as a sister...
You may repel my sentiments, but I will not deny them.
I am much embarrassed by your attentions.
Very well.
You are hurt. I'm sorry. But can I do otherwise without my father's consent? He will never, as you must know. Please suppress this unfortunate attachment. Teach your mind to submit.
My lady.
Miss Isabel, what's become of Mr. Lovell?
Gone out for fresh air.
Do you know each other?
I met Mr. Lovell when I resided this last spring with my aunt in Yorkshire.
Oh, and why did you not recognize him when I introduced you?
My father did not approve.
Why ever not?
My father believes there are prejudices concerning the purity of his birth.
Ah, illegitimate, eh? I see. The bend sinister. Poor lad.
The castle makes a fine prospect, does it not, Mr. Lovell?
Indeed.
You would not guess that this ancient family is going fast into the ground.
You surprise me.
We must harden ourselves to the changes of this trumpery, whirligig world.
I would not be a stoic with a heart of stone.
Wait till your bark has been battered by the storms of 60 years. You will learn to reef your sails.
And not be concerned by the ruin of a family. But how have they come to such a pass?
Sir Arthur's embarrassments have become very pressing. He thought to extricate himself by a scheme of mining for copper. I believe his agents are scoundrels. They have ruined him. My heart aches for him and for the poor young lady who must share his distress. But she was formerly known to you, Mr. Lovell.
Indeed.
You did not meet her as an old acquaintance?
I thought it my duty to wait until she recognised me.
I may say her father's a punctilious old fool. So tell me, Mr. Lovell, why did you come here? A truant disposition?
I may do as I please. I am detached from all the world. I owe no man anything. I have the means of maintaining myself with complete independence.
If you have money enough, there's no more to be said. But as for company, if you want to stay in Fairport, then why not stay with me?
I
want someone to exchange ideas with. Someone to talk to.
Have you no family, Mr. Oldbook?
No, I loved a lady once. I gave my heart to her, but she died, and I could not get it back. Hey, Hugh Evelina. But I have a nephew, my sister's son, Captain McIntyre, Hector McIntyre, with a Highland pedigree as long as his claymore, and his claymore as long as the High Street. I would as soon invite a firebrand into my stackyard. He'd make the very chairs tremble at his brawls. But you are a quiet, well-tempered lad. Set up at Monkbarns for a month or two.
I thank you sincerely, but it is not in my power at present to accept.
We have no society here. There's the old Countess at Glenallan and her son, Lord Geraldine, but they live apart from the world. My Lord Geraldine soars away upon his cello in melancholy seclusion. Adagio. Always adagio, and sees no one, unless it be one who may bring him a gloomy sonata to rehearse. His younger brother...
Mr. Oldbuck! Mr. Oldbuck!
Maggie, is the copper turned to gold?
Mr. Oldbuck, Sir Arthur presents his compliments and says that being so far prevented from showing Mr. Lovell the attentions to which his brave conduct entitles him, he hopes that he and Mr. Lovell will be members of a small party to visit the ruins of St. Ruth's Priory on the next fine day.
Well conned, Maggie.
Oh, thank you, sir.
What shall we do?
Go, man. We'll go by all means.
It frequently happens that the most beautiful points of Scottish scenery lie hidden. This is eminently the case with the ruins of St. Priory. They are not of great extent, but they are of singular beauty, and stand in a wild, sequestered glen.
I wanted to ask you a question, Mr. Oldbuck, about the date of these interesting ruins.
Ah, the house was founded, I believe, in 1273 by Prior Adhemar, an exemplary prelate of strict ascetic habits.
Goodness.
But Sir Arthur and his daughter, and Mr. Lovell and Mr. Oldbuck, have barely begun to enjoy the scene when they are joined by a newcomer, a handsome young man in military dress.
My dear Hector, nephew, whence comest thou?
From Fife, uncle. I learned from one of the servants that I might find you here. I took the opportunity to pay my respects to all. Sir Arthur?
Captain?
Miss Wardour?
Mr. Lovell, this is my nephew, Captain McIntyre. Hector, I recommend Mr. Lovell to your acquaintance.
Sir?
Captain?
Oh, Miss Wardour, you have dropped a glove. Allow me, miss.
Thank you, Captain.
Mr. Lovell observes Captain McIntyre's attentions towards Miss Isabel and thinks he sees a marked and particular tenderness calculated to alarm the jealousy of a lover. And as the party walks on, Captain McIntyre, for his part, takes the next opportunity to ask Mr. Oldbuck about his new acquaintance.
Who is this Lovell? And what is his birth? What is his rank in society?
He is a very gentlemanlike young man. He rendered Miss Water and Sir Arthur a signal service. He positively saved their lives.
That romantic story's true, then. And does this knight aspire to the hand of the lady he saved from peril? She looks dry enough now.
Be a good boy and have some talk with him. You'll find neither his manners nor discourse lacking.
Oh, aye. I'll do the civil thing by your new friend. You are a military man, Mr. Lovell?
I am.
And may I inquire to what regiment do you belong?
The 33rd of Foot.
I know that regiment well. I have served along with them at different times. It is strange circumstance that we have never met, don't you think? How might that be?
I've not lately been with my regiment. I served at Toulon with Sir Samuel Hood.
Indeed, that is more wonderful still. For although I did not serve with the Admiral, I know his staff intimately, and I cannot recollect the name of Lovell.
I have a note in the Admiral's own hand here in my pocketbook.
I recognise the hand, but the address is wanting.
Well, it shall be at your service whenever you choose to inquire after it.
Come, come, what is the meaning of all this? We'll have no swaggering youngsters. Are you come from the wars abroad to stir up domestic strife?
No.
By all means not. At your service, Mr. Lovell. Sir Arthur, are you quite recovered from your ordeal?
In any case, I must return to town.
What, Lovell, you're not going to leave us on account of my foolish nephew. I'll put him to rights.
No, it's nothing.
He's a thoughtless boy.
I shall make my apologies to Miss Warder.
Go your ways, then.
So Mr. Lovell leaves the party. But Mr. Hector McIntyre also takes the opportunity to slip away soon after. He soon catches up with Lovell, who, anticipating the encounter, has not put his horse beyond a slow walk.
Sir?
Captain McIntyre.
I believe I have the right to know who is admitted into Miss Isabel's company.
Well, I shall take the liberty of disputing that right.
Mr. Lovell, if you served as you say you have...
If I have served as I say I have...
Then you must know that you owe me satisfaction.
I shall be proud to give it to you. Your seconds will find me in town.
Very well, sir.
Early next morning, a gentleman waits on Mr. Lovell at his lodgings.
A message? From Captain McIntyre?
The same. Sir, I feel very desirous of acting as peacemaker in this matter. If you will only permit me to inform Captain McIntyre of your real name, for we are led to conclude that the name of Lovell is assumed.
I cannot permit that inference.
If you will have the goodness merely to explain the circumstance in justice to your own character, I will answer for the amicable arrangement of this business.
I do not feel called upon to satisfy the curiosity of Captain McIntyre.
Since that is your resolution, sir, will you favour us with a meeting this evening at 7, close by the ruins of St. Ruth?
I know the spot. I must find a friend to accompany me, but I have no acquaintances in Fairport.
Lieutenant Taffril's gunbrig is coming to the roadstead. He is lodging in town. I am convinced he will assist you. I will give you his direction.
This is a most singular circumstance.
I'm conscious, Mr. Taffril, how little I am entitled to make my present request, but urgency of circumstances...
Give me your hand. I'll see you through this business as well as I can. Honour has the next call on us after country. You are a lad of spirit.
Thank you.
You understand the use of the weapon?
Not particularly, no.
Cavalryman, eh?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry for that. McIntyre is said to be a marksman.
I'm sorry for it also. I must take my aim as well as I can.
I will have our surgeon's mate on the field. He is a clever young man at corking a shot hole. Let us dine together and arrange matters, and then on to St. Ruth, eh?
Lovell and Lieutenant Taffril, with the surgeon's mate, come upon the ground with a purpose of a nature very uncongenial to the soft, mild and pacific character of the hour and scene. And near to the appointed place, seated on the roots of a thorn tree, is old Eddie Ochiltree.
I would speak a word with you, Mr. Lovell. Oh,
this is embarrassing enough.
I see the McIntyre lad coming up, and I guess your purpose.
What has this old fellow to do here?
I served with your father in the 42nd.
Serve where you please. You have no business here.
Hold down your stick, Captain McIntyre. No touch of the wand while my pike staff will hold together.
Well, I was wrong.
What do you come here for, young men? Have you come among the lovely works of God to break his laws? Gang hame. Gang hame like good lads. The friends shall be out to harry us in these days. You'll have fechting enough then.
The old man speaks well. Gentlemen, shall the word be forgive and forget? Let us shake hands and dine together.
The matter has been carried too far. Were we to part without carrying it further, we might go to supper very joyously, but we would rise the next morning with reputations as ragged as our friend here.
God!
Mr. Lovell?
Let us arrange matters as fast as possible.
Madman! Your blood be on your heads!
The seconds measure the ground. The principals take their places. And it is agreed that both parties shall fire when the lieutenant drops his handkerchief.
Ready!
Captain McIntyre's ball grazes his opponent's side, but Mr. Lovell's is more true. McIntyre reels and falls.
Ah! It's nothing. It's nothing. Give us other pistols. Ah! No. No more.
How is your man?
No more. I believe I have had enough.
Captain?
And I fear I deserve it. Mr. Lovell, or whatever your name is, fly and save yourself. Bear witness, all of you. I provoked this matter.
Oh, God.
Shake hands, Lovell. You are a gentleman, and I forgive you my death.
I stand gazing on your deed, Lovell, man. Awah! Awah!
He's right. You must flee, Mr. Lovell. My brig sails this evening. Come on board with me. They will take you up for manslaughter at least. To stay here is madness.
Oh, it was worse madness to come hither. Oh, farewell.
Now our scene changes. Time passes, and I must introduce you, dear listener, to the interior of a fisherman's cottage, in which the doughty Maggie Mucklebucket bustles over a broiling pan of Findhorn haddocks, intended to feed her husband's ancient mother, who sits by the fire, now muttering to herself, now smiling vacantly. To this old lady, Eddie Ochiltree is now conveying all the news of the parish.
So then, young Mr. Lovell fled the scene. Took to sea aboard Taffril's brig, so they say. And Captain Hector's wound was sore, but he's on the mend now. Better than he deserves, breaking the peace with his vixen brawls.
Bad business.
Death afflicts the house of Glenallan. The Countess of Glenallan is lying in state. She's to be buried at St. Ruth's this night with torchlight and all the papist servants.
What's that? Is there a Glenallan deed?
It's the old Countess, good mother.
And is she called evening at last?
Oh, well, there's news of the death of her younger son carried her off at last.
Oh, God forgive her. But the elder, the heir, is he living yet?
Oh, aye, aye, he's living yet.
Then, Eddie Ochiltree, ye maun gang my errand to the house of Glenallan and ask for the earl.
What's this?
Tell him that Aylesmith or the Craig Burnfoot maun see him.
And what likelihood is there that he would see the likes of me?
Go again your ways and give him this ring.
As Eddie, much wondering, advances the 10 miles to Glenallan, he turns over what he understands of the story of that family. He knows that the whole rich estate descended to the Countess lately deceased. She was married to an English gentleman who died shortly after giving her 2 sons. The elder, Lord Geraldine, had been totally under her unbending rule. The younger, Lord Neville, threw off her yoke and went to live in England until his recent death. Lord Geraldine, now inheriting the title, lives on, but oppressed by a deep and gloomy dejection which has never ceased to cloud his features since youth. Eddie is conducted to the music room, where Lord Geraldine now, as ever, meditates in melancholy upon his violoncello.
What is your meaning, Phil? Explain yourself instantly.
My lord, it was old Elspeth Mucklebucket sent me here.
I never heard the name.
With this ring.
And...
She told me your lordship would be more familiar with if I called her Elspeth O'Craigburnfoot.
Is she living?
And entreats to see your lordship before she dies.
It will be a pleasure to neither of us, yet she shall be gratified. She lives on the seashore near Fairport.
Just so, my lord.
Picture the amazement of the village when the rarely seen but all too recognisable figure of Lord Geraldine is seen stooping into Elspeth Mucklebucket's hovel. The ancient widow commands her daughter to leave and then stares long at the face of her visitor.
It's a sorry state. And whose fault is that?
Why did you request so urgently to see me?
You're sure your mirror, the Lady Countess, has gone home?
It is so.
Then I will confess all.
Confess? I know you were a favourite of my mother, until...
My disgrace with her. Aye. Chiefly owing to Miss Evelyn Neville, the young lady bred up in the Glen Allen house, the daughter of your father's cousin.
Miss Evelyn...
You see, your mother and myself both hated her.
For what reason? She was mild, gentle, formed to inspire affection.
Because of the kindness growing between you and she, of course. We drove her out between us. She went to seek refuge with Sir Arthur and his lady at Knockwinnock.
Go on.
Your mother came to me one night and said, "My son loves Evelyn Neville, the Uplighted, and should they have her son, my right over Glen Allen is nae more. We must find means that they will not marry." Oh, I would not consent to stain my hand with blood, but I told her, what if they might be brought to think themselves siblings? Then no Christian law would permit their wedlock.
Do you mean she was not? She was not my father's daughter.
No. But when you transgressed your mother's wish by your secret marriage, you put poison in the weapon we threw and you came rushing to meet it.
Oh, great heaven! Then I'm free of guilt.
I've more to tell. Your mother told you a false tale, and you rushed frae your presence and saddled your horse. And Miss Neville, atween a reason and the want of it, wed, and now carrying your bairn, walked the cliff top edge.
And thus died?
No, my lord. I saw her fall into the tide. I rushed into the sea and drew her out, carried her to my hut, laid her on my bed, the poor lady. And she bore the child before she died.
She gave birth? The child lived?
Aye. A boy.
Oh.
Your mother came. She came to me and I had the babe in my arms and she said, "Elspeth, did you ever pull a new budded flower? Let it be dealt upon."
Had you the heart?
No. She thought it so. So another servant took the child, and what became of the babe, I know not. Heir of Glen Allen, can you forgive me?
Ask forgiveness of God, and not of man. Turn for mercy to him.
Lord Geraldine staggers from the cottage, eyes blind, and so does not see the antiquary out upon his morning walk, and almost cannons into him.
You, old buck.
My lord. Are you sick? Do you have attendance?
No.
Will you sit here?
I should.
I do not mean to intrude.
Our former acquaintance
is of such ancient date and was connected with circumstances so exquisitely painful that I think we can dispense with renewing it.
A few minutes' conversation only. I need your advice.
I am retired from the world. Your lordship will find many more capable to advise you. Since that period when I acted like a fool, and your lordship...
Like a villain, you would say. I beg you, hear me.
As you wish.
20 years ago, at Knockwinnock Castle, was staying a lady.
The unfortunate Miss Evelyn Neville.
Towards whom you entertained sentiments.
I need not remind your lordship of the modes in which you indulged your gaiety at my expense. Doubtless the young lady joined you in well-deserved ridicule.
You do her an injustice. She blamed me for my levity. And indeed, I have never smiled since.
You are pardoned. Remember, I was ignorant at the time that I placed myself in competition with your lordship, and then, when I made inquiries into the manner of Miss Neville's death, I had reason to believe she had met with unfair dealing, and had either been imposed upon by a counterfeit marriage, or that strong measures had been adopted to stifle the evidence of a real union.
Believe me, Mr. Oldbuck, I respected you even when I was most embarrassed by your active attempts to investigate our misfortunes. You showed yourself more worthy of Miss Neville than I. Only belief that our efforts would bring to light a story too horrible to be detailed induced me to help my mother destroy evidence of my union with Evelyn.
Why, man? What induced you?
Because my mother told me that Evelyn and I were brother and sister.
Ah, so that was it.
But she lied. This old beldame has confessed to me that my mother deceived me. Our union was lawful, and it was blessed by a child. My wife gave birth before she died. I had a wee boy.
What became of him?
I do not know.
And now you wish to ascertain his fate?
And do justice to the honor of Evelyn. Will you help me?
With all my heart.
Oldbuck takes Lord Geraldine to Monkbarns to fortify him with food and wine and to show him certain private relics in his cabinet.
I have here a bundle of papers tied with a black ribbon. Examinations taken by Jonathan Oldbuck, J.P., upon the circumstances surrounding an untimely death. Ehu Evelina.
Alas, indeed.
Among these papers is a deposition. Here I have it. On the night of the death, a child was carried from the cottage at Craig Bunfoot and taken in a carriage and four by your brother, huh? Edward Geraldine Neville.
Oh!
I traced the journey for several stages. I believed your brother had taken steps to remove a child stigmatized by illegitimacy. I now conceive he may have believed the shame to be yet more indelible.
But you think, then, that the child may have survived?
Well, why not? Your brother, God rest his soul, was an honourable man. We must set on foot inquiries.
I will write to my brother, steward. Oh, Mr. Oldbuck, I cannot express to you how much your cooperation in this dark and most melancholy business gives me relief and confidence.
Our scene changes again. Let us travel once more over the sands and treacherous cliffs to the castle of Knockwinnock, where Sir Arthur Warder, although escaped from drowning, now struggles and sinks under his financial embarrassments, and his daughter Isabel regards him with an anxious eye.
You will be happy to hear, sir, that Lieutenant Taffrell's brig has got safe into Leith Roads. There had been apprehensions for his safety. And for that of Mr. Lovell, I suppose.
And what is Lieutenant Taffrell and his gun brig to me? What do I care who is saved or lost?
I thought you would be happy to hear...
Oh, I am happy. And to make you happy too, you shall have some of my good news. Read this.
What is it?
Read it aloud.
I see the contents are unpleasant.
No, not so. They will accommodate us by taking our horses and place, that's all. Scoundrels! I shall write him a proper answer. But why should I take up my time in reply? I shan't always be kept in prison, I suppose.
In prison, sir?
Aye, debtor's prison.
Oh, Father, but our family, our friends, is there no one to help?
I have exhausted their kindness.
Shall I send to Monkbarns?
To what purpose? Oldbuck cannot lend me the sum we need. He knows we are drowned in debt.
But he is shrewd and sensible.
Go take your walk, dear child. Now you know the worst. I would be alone for a while.
Miss Isabel goes out as she is told, but not before dispatching a servant to summon Mr. Oldbuck. Then she wanders into a little glen overhung with larch and hazel, in which she once, not so long ago, had such a distressing encounter with poor Lovell. She now recalls every word by which he pressed and she refused his suit. Thoughts of regret press in upon her as, at a turn in the path, she meets Eddie Ochiltree out upon his rounds.
Oh, my bonny lady.
Eddie!
I have been wishing muckle to meet with you.
Here I am.
And if you can, what's hanging over your father's house?
Great distress,
sweet,
I fear,
clean,
Eddie.
Clean, the bailiff's man will be there the day we always tackle.
Are you sure?
Even as I tell you, lady. But dinna be cast down. There's a heaven over your head here, as well as in that fearful night when the waters rose. Oh, if I had a good horse.
Where would you go? I have sent to Mr. Oldbuck.
But there is another place I can.
Make haste, my bonny lady. Find me a horse for the love of goodness.
Mr. Oldbuck is out walking with his nephew Hector, now recovered from his wound, when the messenger sent from Miss Isabel reaches them.
Something very particular has happened, and Miss Isabel begs you will come without delay.
Oh, I can guess what this is, nephew.
Aye, Sir Arthur's course is drawing to a close.
What can I do?
Do, sir? Go, right away.
But Sir Arthur's griefs are beyond our cure.
I cannot think of their distress, of poor Miss Isabel, without wishing to show some sympathy at least. I will run on and announce you coming.
As you wish, Hector, though you might save your breath.
By the time Captain Hector McIntyre enters the courtyard of Knockwinnock Castle, the bailiffs have already taken possession. He sees the fair Isabel standing with the beggar, Eddie Ochiltree, and gazing dumbly upon her father's ruin.
Dear Miss Warder, my uncle is coming, and I'm sure he will find some way to clear the house of these rascals.
Alas, Captain McIntyre, I fear it will be too late.
Captain, could I but get a horse? I'll do this family the best day's doing since time began.
What good could you do, old man?
Come, let's yoke yon cart.
But humour him, Captain.
Haste ye, time is precious.
Very well, my lady.
Hold steady there.
I beg your pardon. You must remove nothing here or you will be liable for the consequences.
What the devil, sir? Have you the impudence to prevent us from carrying out this young lady's wishes?
Captain McIntyre, sir, I have no quarrel with you. But if you interrupt me in my duty, I must declare myself divorced.
And who the devil cares? I will break your bones if you prevent me from harnessing this horse.
I take all who stand here to witness that I showed him my blazon. I declare...
What the deuce is the matter here? Mr. Sweetclean?
The man has insulted Lady Isabel.
Sweetclean?
Sir?
You know me. I am Justice of the Peace.
Sir?
We'll have no divorcements here. Let them harness the horse. It will be back again soon enough. Give them an hour or two.
As you wish, sir.
Miss Isabel, shall we go and see your father?
If you please, Mr. Oldbuck. Mr. Oldbuck is here, Father.
Sir Arthur.
Always happy to see friends, in fair weather or foul.
This sad business of yours, can nothing be done?
You may read the charge.
Mm.
Is there no remedy? Are we ruined, Mr. Oldbuck?
Well, I hope not, but this demand is very large, and others will doubtless come in now.
Aye, never doubt that. Where the slaughter is, the eagles will be gathered together. And like a sheep fallen from a precipice, I will not be on the heather 10 minutes before half a dozen crows will be pecking out my eyes.
Sir Arthur, let us have some conversation on the state of your affairs and see what we can do. Shall we go into the library?
Very well.
All morning they are shut up together until Miss Isabel interrupts them, pale of face and dressed in her travelling clothes. Behind her come Mr. Sweepclean and Captain Hector, both heated.
This gentleman says he can wait no longer. He must attend upon us.
Not let the damned scoundrel wait.
Mr. Oldbuck, sir, your nephew holds very uncivil language, and I have borne too much of it already.
His Highland blood is up. He'll be fighting a duel again. Come, Mr. Sweepclean, give us a little more time. I know you won't wish to hurry, Sir Arthur.
By no means, sir, but I am not justified in holding my prisoner any longer. Unless I am to get payment of the sum specified.
Oh, I'll send him to the right about.
Foolish boy, be quiet. The fellow's only doing his miserable duty, and you will make matters worse by opposing him. I fear, Sir Arthur, you must accompany this man to Fairport. There is no help for it.
Let it be so.
My nephew will escort Miss Isabel to Monkbarns.
No, sir. I go with my father. I have prepared his clothes and my own.
We must go, then, to jail. And what of that? It's only a place we can't get out of, after all. Suppose a fit of the gout, and this house would be the same. Aye, old buck, we'll call it a fit of the gout, only without the damned pain.
As Sir Arthur and his daughter prepare to enter the carriage which is waiting to take them away to distraint and disgrace, the cart upon which Eddie Ochiltree has set out upon his mysterious errand comes tearing into the courtyard, and Eddie tumbling off it.
Stop! Stop! I have it!
Have
What, old fellow?
Epistolary correspondence! Here you are, sir.
God save the king!
What is all this?
Mr. Sweepclean?
Sir?
You must sweep yourself off with all your attendants, rag, tag and bobtail.
Who's to pay my charges?
Seest thou this paper?
Ah, weel. I thought it would be a queer thing if ultimate diligence was done against such a gentleman as Sir Arthur. I'll go my ways.
What is it? Hold back!
A draft upon the bankers of Fairport, sir, in your favour, to the sums demanded and beyond. Be of good cheer. See, here, in good clerkly hand.
But how? Who?
Ah, that we are to discover. But this at least deserves celebration. You could do justice to a glass of Burgundy, old friend, as well could I.
While the party celebrates, Mr. Oldbuck follows his antiquarian instincts and makes his investigations among the ancient relics of his acquaintance.
Eddie.
Sir?
You knew there was good tidings. How was that?
What, sir, from Mr. Lovell?
Lovell? You've been in correspondence with him?
Aye.
Where is he? How is he?
I just got a scrape of a pen for him to say there would be a packet at Tannanborough with letters of great consequence to the Knockwinnock folk.
And how does he have to do with this business? Where the devil has he been?
Oh, that I cannot tell you, sir, without contradicting his positive orders. I reckon he had to see somebody at Edinburgh before he could move in this matter.
Uncle, Sir Arthur wishes to drink a glass with you.
In a moment. In and have some meat, Eddie. You've earned it.
Aye, sir. I will.
Hector?
Uncle.
A word with you.
The Burgundy is an excellent wine.
Hector, I am sometimes inclined to suspect that in one respect you are a fool.
In one only?
One par excellence. I have sometimes thought that you have cast your eyes upon Miss Warder.
Well, sir.
Well, sir. As though it were the most reasonable thing in the world for a humble captain to marry a baronet's daughter.
I presume to think there would be no degradation for Miss Warder. And in point of fortune, we are pretty even, since neither of us have got any. There may be an error, but I cannot plead guilty to presumption.
But here lies the error, Hector. She won't have you.
Indeed, sir.
I must inform you she likes another man, so I advise you to beat your retreat, draw off your forces, for the fort is too well garrisoned for you to storm it.
I shall not break my heart for Miss Warder.
Why, Hector, I was afraid of a scene. I thought you were desperately in love.
You would have me desperately in love with a woman that does not care about me.
Ah, there is some sense in what you say. Yet I would have given a good deal some 20 years since to have been able to think as you do.
In any case, I must quit this company soon and go to Edinburgh. I see Major Neville is arrived there. I should like to see him.
Who the devil is Major Neville?
Oh, a very distinguished young officer. I have had occasion to hear a good deal of him. We have several mutual friends.
The antiquary wanders out of the castle courtyard, over the bridge that spans the moat and onto the green sward. He gazes idly at the mossy walls of the old keep, and one corner of his mind runs on the sieges and battles they have seen, while another ponders more recent events. After a while, to him enters fair young Miss Isabel.
Mr. Oldbuck.
My dear.
My father says a note has come from a Major Neville, asking if he might pay his respects. We wondered if you might know this person.
I might, but I cannot say for sure.
Perhaps he may explain our stroke of fortune.
Perhaps.
My father bade him come and be welcome.
That is good, for I see a rider approaching. Indeed, I see two.
Two horsemen are indeed approaching the castle. One, coming from Glenallan, is at some distance, but the other, moving swiftly along the Tannanborough Road, is almost upon them.
I wonder, I seem to recognise this rider, do you?
Is it Major Neville?
I think we knew him as Lovell.
Oh!
He wants to talk to you, not me, my dear. Why do you not go to him now?
I...
Go along, go along. See, he's waiting for you.
As she goes to meet the dismounted officer, the other rider approaches at a more genteel pace. It is Lord Geraldine.
Old Buck.
My lord.
I heard Sir Arthur was in difficulties. I came to give what assistance I could.
No need, my lord. The day is saved.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. Who do we have to thank for such an act?
I believe a Major Neville.
I've not met such a person. He bears my poor brother's name.
You may know him, sir. He is yonder, talking to Miss Isabel.
He is very familiar with her.
They are old friends. Is he not familiar to you too, my lord?
Good God. He's so strikingly like...
Like the unfortunate Evelyn. I felt my heart warm to him from the first, and now I feel I know why.
But who is he?
I surmise your brother brought him up as his natural son. The poor young man thought he was illegitimate, and now he has discovered otherwise.
Gracious heaven! It is my child!
Mr. Oldbuck.
Sir.
You have a claim on me, sir, for having passed myself under a false name and injured your nephew.
You served him as he deserved, and now, sir, allow me to have the pleasure of introducing a son to a father.
Father?
My son.
We will not attempt to describe such a meeting. But in the evening of that day, all were bidden to Glen Allen, where the yeomanry drank to the prosperity of the new heir and young master. A month afterwards, this fortunate youth was married to Isabel Warder, the antiquary making the lady a present of a ring.
A massive circle of antique chasing, bearing the motto of my ancestor, Aldebrand Oldenbuck. Curious inscription, partially erased, which some argue embodies a dog...
In The Antiquary, by Walter Scott, Old Buck was played by Richard Wilson, Eddie, by Alexander Morton, Sir Arthur, Stuart McGugan, Isabel, Melody Grove, Lovell, Dominic Rye, Geraldine, Christian Rodsker, Taffril, Charles Davis, Hector, John Walk, Caxon, Sweep Clean and Leslie, David Hayden, Elspeth and Maggie, Beth Tuckey, and the servant and the boy, Felix Ortona, with David Tennant as Walter Scott. The music was composed by Ross Hughes and Espen Chalva, and the cello was played by George Cook. The play was dramatised for radio by Robin Brooks and produced and directed by Clive Brill. It was a Brill production for BBC Radio 4.
And next week, the great Scott concludes with The Talisman.